It's Tuesday, the 10th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to Kendrick Perkins, DJ Augustine, and Tony Snell. Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and licensed to Ilgauskas, who you can find on Twitter at RoyIsTheBoy. And thank you to RoyIsTheBoy / licensed to Ilgauskas for sponsoring today's podcast, and also, of course, to Moneyball.com.au, Australia's only daily fantasy sports site where you can jump on and win yourself some cash. Take me on in some head-to-head challenges, in some league challenges, which plenty of people have been doing, and I've been really appreciating it. So everybody go and support moneyball.com.au and support the podcast and be a sponsor yourself by leaving a review on iTunes, just like Roy is the Boy did. Okay, so we're here. Obviously, it's Tuesday. We're talking the games from Monday in the States. Looking back on those games, looking ahead to the games on Tuesday from a daily fantasy point of view, we've got a fair bit to get into. So,
let's get to it.
I'll get that right one of these days. Thank you, Michael Bolton. The monstrous line of the night goes to Jeff Teague of the Atlanta Hawks.
My name is Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff Teague. Played 35 minutes, 24 points for Teague. He hit a three. He had 2 rebounds, 9 assists, a steal, 3 blocks, which is a bit out of the ordinary for him, 10 of 17 shooting from the field, and he went 3 of 3 from the free throw line. So a good night from Teague. He's been a little bit up and down, I think it's fair to say, this season, but overall, he's putting up some really good numbers. He's had a couple of quiet games, but overall, the numbers, what he's doing has been really good. 18.7 points, a 3 a game, 6.6 assists, 3 rebounds, 1.4 steals, 0.7 blocks, which will come down. The thing that's encouraging from a Teague point of view, if you own him, is he's only shooting 44% from the field. Last year, one of his key advantages as a fantasy point guard was the fact that he was a 46% shooter. There's a couple of things here. It either gets better and it goes back up to 46%, which is possible, or the fact that Damari Carroll's not there and Kent Bazemore's probably not quite as respected or trusted as a shooter, that the defenses their attention is not spread across the 5 guys as much this season. So you're seeing Kyle Korver struggle a little bit more this year, even though he's had a couple of big games, he's had a couple of bad games as well, and Teague's percentages drop. But overall, the production he's providing is really awesome, and he's putting up some fantastic numbers. So Jeff Teague is the monstrous line of the night. The waiver wire line of the night is none other than basketball savant J.J. Hickson of the Denver Nuggets. Don't really want to talk too much about J.J. Hickson ever again in my life, but here we are, and J.J. Hickson got a start because the Denver front court is busted. Joffrey Lavernier was out again. Yusuf Nurkic continues to be out. We still have no Wilson Chandler. So Hickson got the start. He played 30 minutes. He went 19-13. The Nuggets actually got a win, and that's any sort of win for them is a good win. So a big win for them. 19-13. He blocked 3 shots. He went 7 of 11 from the field and 5 of 11 from the free throw line. Hickson's one of those guys we know he's a rebound thief. He's not a great fantasy option. We're not getting excited. There are other guys who are going to come back here. Lavernier, Nurkic. You might be able to, in some situations, if you see Lavernier out for another game, look at Hickson from a daily point of view. But his numbers this year, they haven't been all that good, even in the games when he has started. This is clearly his best performance of the season. And the fact that he's blocking shots is something he never really does. He's not really a shot blocker, so you can expect that to go down. So there's nothing really to see from a J.J. Hickson point of view. I imagine there's a chance that he gets phased completely out of the rotation when Nurkic and Lavernier come back, as they run that Jokic, Arthur, Fareed, Nurkic, Jokic, Lavernier. You know the guys I mean. I think Hickson then becomes the last man in that group, and he could potentially get phased out of the rotation. So there's not a huge amount to see from him at this point in time. The young gun of the night goes to, I was going to give it to someone from Minnesota. Well, I am giving it to someone from Minnesota. Well, which guy? Is it Andrew Wiggins? Is it Karl-Anthony Towns? I am going with Andrew Wiggins. of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He was great again. His second consecutive 30-point game. He had 33 in 38 minutes. He hit a three, five rebounds, four assists, one steal, one block, 15 of 22 from the field, 2 of 4 from the free throw line, and definitely getting his season back on track now. He's averaging just under 20 points a game, a 3 a game, which is a big improvement on the half a 3 he hit a game last season. Still, you know, not getting enough in the defensive categories, half a steal, half a block. Not a huge, you know, still not a great fantasy season from him, but things are trending in the right direction for Wiggins. So if you've spent one of those early picks on him, you'd be happy with the way things are trending after a pretty disappointing start for him to the season. The dud of the night. We're going to head back to Atlanta and a guy that I touched on a little bit earlier. And this guy, I think, has received two or three duds of the night already this season. And that is Kyle Korver of the Atlanta Hawks. He played 32 minutes. He registered just 5 points. He only took five shots. He hit a three, had two rebounds and an assist and nothing else. And Korver has he's been very up and down. Look, his numbers are still, they're okay, but when you drafted Kyle Korver because you want him to hit 2.5 to 3 threes a game, he's only at 1.5. That doesn't make you happy. He's not getting the half a block a game that he got last season. He's at 0.1. Yeah, 0.9 steals is good. 3 assists and 3.6 rebounds. They're solid numbers. And you love the fact that he hasn't missed a free throw yet and he's shooting 52% from the field. But the key category of the threes is really down for him. And if that got back up to 2.5, then you have no problem with the sort of production that Korver is doing. He's had some big games, some bad games. You'd have to think that it will even out. But I really do doubt that he approaches the heights that he reached last season for the reasons that I've touched on many times throughout the offseason and the early goings of this season, and that being the two injuries, the fact that he's 34 years old as well. Okay, that is that does it for the awards portion of the show. What we're going to do now is we're going to get into these games in a little bit more detail and start breaking them down. As you can see, if you are watching this live on YouTube, the box scores are up on the screen for you to follow along at home, assuming you're watching this at home. The first game of the night is the Chicago Bulls and the Philadelphia 76ers, and there was a lot happening before this game. We heard rumors earlier in the day, well, you probably heard them. I was asleep when the rumors first came out. Woke up, heard the rumors that Joakim Noah is going to be starting over Nikola Mirotic, and to tell you the truth, it pisses me off. I like Joakim Noah. I think that Joakim Noah's still got, you know, a fair bit to offer as a player, but the pairing of Noah and Gasol is a terrible pairing. They're both centers. There's no spacing on that team in that sort of starting line. Yes, Doug McDermott can shoot. Jimmy Butler's not a knockdown three-point shooter. Derrick Rose can't hit threes. Gasol can't. Noah can't. No one can hit threes apart from McDermott in that starting lineup if Noah and Gasol were to start. Okay, so that was what they were going to do. They were going to put Noah and Gasol back out there, that tandem that they ran last year, and it's just not a great offensive tandem. And we hear, yeah, okay, Noah's starting, game time, Noah's starting. You know, 5 minutes before the game, Mirotic is starting. Noah's not playing at all. He felt some soreness in his knee, and that's all Nikola Mirotic needed to really put on a big performance. He went 20 and 10 in 28 minutes, his second 20 and 10 performance for the season. Three threes, two steals, 6 of 11 shooting, 5 of 7 free throws. And yes, as someone pointed out to me today on Twitter, it was against the Sixers, who are extremely injury riddled, would probably be a better phrase. But it's still good to see Mirotic do it, and this is what he can do. I hope that they continue. The ideal starting combo to me is Mirotic and Noah. I don't think that the Bulls will do that because of Pau Gasol, basically. But Mirotic and Gasol, well, Mirotic needs to start. He's the best player out of that front court, guys, and I don't care that he's been struggling. There's been reasons for it. He got him back on track here. And yes, he's had a couple of bad games. He's also had three really good games. He's had a 22 and another 20 and 10 game, a 19 and 9 game, I think, as well, against pretty decent opposition. So yes, this was a bad Sixers team that he played, but this is what he can do, and he doesn't need 35 minutes to do it. He did all this in just 28 minutes. So I sarcastically tweeted out today, you know, should I drop Mirotic? Because you saw, there's so many things. ESPN was recommending to drop Mirotic in one of their blurbs. You should drop him and stream his spot. People, you know, deciding to do ridiculous moves. Should I drop Mirotic and add Will Barton? No, you shouldn't. Mirotic is a guy with top 50 potential. I'll maintain that. Let's hope that he sticks in this 30-minute role. And it doesn't really matter if he comes on the bench. If he's going to get 28 to 30 minutes, that's when he has key value. So it's probably hard to buy low on him now that he's, you know, dropped a 20 and 10 game, but I was buying low on him before this game significantly. And let's hope that this is some more solid production. As I said, there were reasons in those other games. Foul trouble was a lot of it, and his shots weren't falling. I believe in Nikola Mirotic. Pau Gasol had 6 blocks to go along with his 16 and 9, and Taj Gibson had 7 and 7 with 2 steals and a block. With Joakim Noah out, Bobby Portis got off the bench. He played 10 minutes, wasn't all that productive. A steal and a block's nice, and 2 points, and he's going to be limited to that role for most of the season. Derrick Rose went 12, 5 and 7. Jimmy Butler, definitely a down night for him. He only took 6 shots, but he only played 26 minutes. He didn't need to play big minutes. Again, this was the Sixers. He didn't need to get out there for 40 minutes. 7, 6 and 5 with a 3 and a steal. What's interesting to me, though, is in those 26 minutes, he only took 6 shots. McDermott took 15 shots in his 28 minutes. Rose took 14. Gasol took 17. Mirotic took 11 shots. Butler took less shots than Tony Snell and Aaron Brooks and Etuan Moore. So that's a weird one. You're obviously not impressed if you're a Butler owner, but there's definitely no need to panic. I love how McDermott's looking in the starting lineup. 18 points with 3 threes. He doesn't provide you anything else, so it's hard to own him in a standard league. The next game that is up on the next game, the next team is TJ McConnell. He had another 8 assists and 2 blocks. And this is his second 2-block game, I think, in his last 2 or 3 games. 6 points, 5 rebounds, and this is pretty representative of what we're going to see of TJ McConnell. Big assist numbers, decent rebounds, really low points, some poor percentages. It's going to be like that. And yes, he has a value for those assists, but I still, been digging as much as I can to try and find out about any plans they have for the point guard. It's hard to find exact information, but the feeling is that Kendall Marshall will become that point guard at some point when he comes back. So McConnell may hold 6 weeks of value as an assist guy, and even then, he's not providing it in every category. Still should be owned everywhere, but bear that in mind. Phil Pressey played 13 minutes off the bench and had 5 assists, and Jeremy Grant was able to go with the injury. He had the poke in the eye, that's right. So he was able to play 11 minutes with 3 blocks, and that's definitely his strength, is getting those block shots. We don't need to own him. Nick Stauskas, 5 points. It looks bad for him. 5 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals, but he took 13 shots. So we're not too worried there. The shots weren't falling. He was 2 of 13. So there's not any need to be panicked about Stauskas, because he's still a guy. He's still a guy that I think has to be owned in pretty much all leagues at this point. Nerlens Noel was a late scratch with sore wrist. So Rishon Holmes, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong. Rishon Holmes started, played 28 minutes, went 11 and 3 and 2 blocks. And that was probably enough to return value for him in a daily fantasy setting. And that's probably the only reason you want to look at him. Noel shouldn't be out for too much longer. Jahlil Okafor had a big game, 21 and 15, his first career NBA double-double. He had 2 blocks and just murdered your percentages. 9 of 25 from the field, 3 of 8 from the free throw line, and this free throw percentage thing is becoming a real problem now. As we all thought it would, the field goal percentage, he's going to have nights where he shoots poorly. He's going to have some big field goal nights, but the free throws, strap yourself in if you weren't punting with Okafor, because it is going to become a problem as he starts going to the line a lot more and missing a lot of shots, which is basically what he did today. The next game up is the Orlando Magic and the Indiana Pacers. Evan Fournier continues his path to be the league leader in minutes. He played 40 minutes, 21 points with 4 threes, 2 rebounds, 1 assist, and 2 steals. Of course, he still is a must-own player. Alfred Payton, the best thing about his line is he played 37 minutes, 11 points, 7 assists, 3 steals, solid percentages. It's good to have Alfred back. Victor Oladipo, 15 and 7 with a couple of blocks. A poor shooting night from Victor Oladipo, and he's been shooting the ball fairly poorly all season, but he's still providing you pretty good numbers, so you've got to be happy with that. This was a Toby Harris limited minutes game. 29 for Toby, 8 and 10 on some really, really poor shooting. And Aaron Gordon, he can't get a role, neither can Mario Hezonja. So if for some reason you're holding Gordon and Hezonja in 12-team standard leagues, there's no need for that. Gordon went 4-2 and 2, Hezonja went 2-2 and 2. And neither of them have been able to put up a big game in a fair chunk of time. There was still no Nikola Vucevic. Dwayne Dedmon got the start. He went 5 and 9 with 2 steals, so provided some nice DFS value, but not much more. And we had a Channing Frye sighting. He played 23 minutes, and most of the other minutes at center that Dedmon didn't play. 4 threes for Frye, 14 points, and 8 rebounds. I don't imagine this will be an ongoing thing where we need to look at value for Channing Frye. Onto the Pacers, George Hill, 23 and 7, 2 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 4 threes. Big, big night from George Hill. Same as Paul George, who started off the game on fire had 19 points in the first quarter, only another 8 for the rest of the game, but still a good return, 27-4-7 with 3 threes. And Jan Mahimi had a decent game too, 9 rebounds, 2 blocks. He remains that guy. You want rebounds, you want blocks, you can get it from him. The two guys who were battling ankle problems returned. CJ Miles went back to the starting lineup, hit 2 threes for 9 points in 27 minutes and got 2 steals, and that's what you bank on him for, threes and steals. And he gave it to you, and you can't ask for much more than that. Stuckey came back, hurt his ankle again, played just 18 minutes. We might not see him for a couple of games now. And Monte Ellis had a real stinker. He was battling for the dud of the night. 1 of 9 for 2 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. Did save his night. He'd had some pretty big games in the couple leading up to that. So let's cut him a little bit of slack, and hopefully the owners of Monte Ellis don't go and drop him after this one bad game. Or if they do, please go and add him. The Timberwolves, touched on Andrew Wiggins already. Zach LaVine had a nice shooting night off the bench, 5 of 7 for 13 points. He had 6 assists and 3 steals. We're on obviously only monitoring him at this point, but that's a good night. And Karl Anthony Towns, another double-double, 17 and 12 with 3 blocks and great percentages. 7 of 8 from the line, 5 of 7 from the field. Ricky Rubio, 10 and 8 with 3 steals. That's a pretty nice Rubio line. And Nemanja Bjelica played 30 minutes off the bench, 11 points. He hit 3 threes, went 5 rebounds and 4 assists. He's still got another 4 games this week. Like the rest of the Wolves, it looks like he's going to get that 29 minutes a game most nights as the preferred backup big man option. I mentioned my opinion on him hasn't changed. Yes, there's value in it, but I don't ever think he's becoming a top 100 player. He just doesn't seem to have the ability to put up these big numbers. He can put up solid numbers and you can use that, but I'm just not too excited about his booming potential. Gorgui Dieng's a guy who continues to frustrate. 16 minutes, well, he doesn't frustrate. The way he's being used is frustrating. 16 minutes for him, 6 points, 3 rebounds, 2 steals. I'm still want to hold him for another week or so and see exactly what plays out. But if he's going to be getting 16 minutes a night, that's a problem. He'd been getting over 20 in the last couple of games and putting up some decent numbers, but we just need to wait it out for a week. Now, there might be someone that you want to add, and by all means, you can drop Dieng in that situation. I will try to hold him as best I can, but there's going to be situations where you can't afford to do that. Kevin Martin returned from his personal issue, played 24 minutes, 13 points with a couple of threes and not much else for him. And Kevin Garnett grabbed 8 rebounds in 18 minutes. Tayshaun Prince still playing 24 minutes a night. Pretty yuck. On to the Atlanta Hawks. Paul Millsap, he is just putting up massive, massive nights game after game. 22, 5, and 6 for Millsap. 3 threes, 2 steals, 2 blocks. He is putting up just one of the underrated big seasons of this year. If you grabbed him in a roto league specifically, you must be wrapped. He is averaging 17 points, 1.6 threes, 8.7 rebounds, 4.1 assists, 2.3 steals, 1.1 block. So not only is he a triple one guy, he's clearly a triple one guy. He's 1.6, 2.3, 1.1, plus 9 rebounds, plus 4 assists, 48 and 70 are his percentages. He is just absolutely destroying it at the moment, putting up just massive, massive value. He's so underrated as a fantasy player and an NBA player. Kent Bazemore, the shot didn't fall, and this is something that I did warn was going to be an issue. 4 of 11, but he contributed in other areas. 6 rebounds, a 3, 3 assists, 5 steals, 1 block. Continues to be a must-own guy. He seems to have locked up that small forward shooting guard spot in Atlanta. Now, I don't think anyone's taking those minutes away from him, and there are going to be bad nights from him shooting-wise, but at least he's contributing in other areas, and you have to like it. I'll admit that I was wrong on Bazemore at the start of the season. Dennis Schroeder went 12 and 4 with a couple of threes. Al Horford, 14 and 6 with 2 more threes for him as well. And Thiago Splitter continues to be limited. 16 minutes. I don't know why they're giving him so few minutes. It just doesn't make sense, especially when Mike Scott is the other option that they're giving him to. And they don't even play Mike Muscala. You know, Scott is the worst of this bunch. Splitter should be getting more minutes, unless he just physically can't handle it, which is a possibility coming off a real big injury-plagued season last year. Maybe he just can't handle the extra minutes. I would love to see him be getting more minutes out there, because he can be a very good player. And if you heard the podcast I did, not this podcast, it was on Mika Honkasalo's podcast, and you can check him out on Twitter at mhonkasalo. He's started his own podcast. We talked about Thiago Splitter a lot and just how good of a player he is, how good of a passer he is, how good of a defender he is. He should be getting more minutes than this. I just think there's got to be some sort of health issue that's keeping him off the court. Portland and Denver. Damian Lillard again, 33 and 7 with 3 threes. Your free throw percentage is great, 9 of 9. Your field goal percentage, 9 of 22, not so awesome. And CJ McCollum, another nice night shooting the ball. Another nice night scoring the ball. 16 points, but he went 6 of 15. A couple of threes, 3 rebounds and 2 assists. And he's putting up pretty decent numbers. He's top 50 in 9 cat value. He's averaging over 20 points a game, 2.5 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 0.8 steals. So some pretty nice numbers from CJ McCollum. He has slipped a little in the last week, but you can't really complain. Myers Leonard almost double-doubled, 11 and 9 with a 3, and Mason Plumlee went 15 and 7 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Leonard and Plumlee are available on waiver wires in leagues, and I really don't think they should be. Yes, Plumlee is likely going to be a free throw issue in most situations. He was 5 of 7 here, so that's not terrible, but in most nights he's going to be a free throw punt guy. But he can get a lot of steals for a big man. He's a good rebounder. He's a decent scorer. He can pass okay. I don't think there's any way he should be around. If you're a team that owns Drummond or Jordan or Howard or Okafor and Plumlee's around, and you just want that sort of extra stability in your rebounds or even a big man who gives you some steals, he's a really good option. Helfrich Aminu was all over the box score, 12-4-2, 2 threes, a steal and a block. He just keeps doing what he needs to do. And Ed Davis, 15 minutes for him. There's no point in owning Ed Davis in a standard league. I don't think Plumlee and Leonard are going to get the most or the majority of those minutes. On to the Nuggets. Emmanuel Mudiay in 28 minutes, 18-6-5 with a couple of blocks. Finally got his shot to fall here, 6 of 12. So a good night shooting the ball. Nikola Jokic in 16 minutes went 10-2 with 2 steals. A good night for him. He's a really efficient shooter. 3 of 3 from the field, 4 of 4. From the free throw line, and Randy Foy chimed in with 13 points. Danilo Gallinari had a stinker, 2 of 10 for 6 points. Gary Harris had 7 points, and he's not a standard league guy, while Kenneth Faried went 17 and 8 in his 31 minutes. Not much else to really talk about. I said Will Barton moved back to the bench and had 11 and 3. It's going to be real tough to own him in a standard league. Jameer Nelson sat this one out with an injury. He had a back problem, so we saw Foy getting more of those backup point guard minutes. And the Nuggets are just a good win for them, but there's a lot of just garbage on this team. I like Mudiay a lot, like Jokic, I like Nurkic, I like Lavernier, I love Gallo, but there's a lot of players I don't like. Hickson, Foy, Farid, just Arthur, just a lot of guys that I am not a fan of at all. The San Antonio Spurs and the Sacramento Kings, an easy win for the Spurs. Kawhi went 24-3-2 with 3 threes, 2 steals, 2 blocks on super efficient shooting. LaMarcus Aldridge 16-9 with a couple of blocks. Tim Duncan 11-14 in 23 minutes. Tony Parker 13 points in 21 minutes. Danny Green, the shooting is still not there. 5 points with a 3. You have 4 assists and 2 blocks. He's still continuing to do little things. But I know it's frustrating. He has to be owned. Someone just sent a message through before. Does he need to be owned? Should I pick him up in a 9-cat league? Yes, you should. I think he has to be owned everywhere. Now, whether you drop him, it depends who you drop, really. Look, your team might be stacked where you go, I don't want to drop these guys. The question was, do I drop Evan Fournier for him? I think Green will be the better player by the end of the season, but it's almost impossible to justify dropping Fournier at this point. So I don't think I would do that. I would keep Fournier. And look, maybe Green doesn't end up on your team, but he shouldn't be sitting on a waiver wire for that long. I'd be inclined to try and do a 2-for-1 trade. Send 2 of your guys away, get 1 better guy back, and then add Danny Green. And then you're probably getting an upgrade in that situation as well. So that's something, if you can try and pull it off, to do it. Manu Ginobili, I touched on him yesterday. He played 18 minutes here, 6 points, but still 5 assists and 2 steals. He's still providing those little bits of value, and I don't think many people would have expected much from Manu, but he's putting up some nice numbers. For the Kings, there was no Darren Collison, but there was Boogie Cousins. 21 and 12 for Cousins, 2 steals, a block. 5 of 20 from the field is not a good shooting night for Cousins. 11 of 15 from the line is all right. It's not fantastic. 4 turnovers for him, which is pretty par for the course. But it's good to have Boogie back out there. Rajon Rondo played exactly 48 minutes. He played every minute of the game. He went 8-6-12 with 3 steals. So you got the nice rebounds, the nice assists, the nice steal numbers. He will struggle to play 48 minutes again for the season with Collison back, which should be pretty soon. So yes, Rondo should be owned, but don't go and buy him for a huge price or anything like that off someone. Omri Caspi continued to play well, 16-5 with 3 steals and 2 3-pointers for him as well. So a pretty nice night from Omri Caspi. Marco Bellinelli, 17 points in 32 bench minutes with 5 assists. A nice night from him also. And Willie Cauley-Stein starting 4 and 6. He doesn't need to be owned in 12 team leagues, nor does Costa Kufos, who went back to the bench but still had 6 rebounds and 3 blocks. Rudy Gay is probably one of the biggest buy low guys in the league at the moment, 10 and 5 with 4 assists in his 32 minutes. I'd be buying real low on him. And when I say buy low, I don't mean, okay, Rudy Gay is out there, I'm going to offer a top 50 player for him. No, just go low. Go lower than that. Offer a top 80 player for him. Yeah, buying, getting an extra one round of value on him isn't enough when he's slumping this badly. I'd rather get someone else and see. And if it doesn't work, if he can't pull it off, well, whatever. Just forget about it. But when it's time for a buy low offer, go low. And then maybe work yourself back up. But don't go, okay, Rudy, I think Rudy Gay is the 30th best player. I'll trade the 39th best player. That's not buying low. That's buying equal. You need to go low on these players to really maximize your value. James Anderson started, played 7 minutes. Good on you, George Karl. That's really helpful to everybody. The Detroit Pistons and the Golden State Warriors. Andre Drummond could not get another 2020 game. He did have another double-double, though, 14 and 15. 2 steals, 2 blocks. Missed both his free throws, but continues at a fantastic rate. Reggie Jackson went 22 and 5 with 2 steals and a 3. He did suffer a bit of a thigh issue, a thigh bruise. We'll have to monitor his status to see how that affects him moving forward, but he's been really good. Marcus Morris played 43 minutes, while Ersan Ilyasova played 17. It's very hard to own Ersan at this point. And Stanley Johnson had his best game. He played 32 bench minutes, went 20 and 7 with a couple of 3s. Don't think that means we're rushing to pick him back up, but if that happens for a couple of games in a row, then you have to like that. On to the Warriors. Klay Thompson, 24 points, 4 3s, a couple of steals, a nice night from Klay. And Draymond Green almost got the low-end triple-double. 6, 10, and 9 for him. 4 steals, 2 blocks, a great all-round performance. And Steph Curry, yeah, not his best night, definitely. 7 of 18 shooting, 22, 5, and 5, 3 3s and 3 steals. But it's very hard to complain about those sort of numbers. Harrison Barnes, a standard night for him, 12 points. And Festus Ezeli got the start over Andrew Bogut. 8 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 blocks, while Bogut in his 19 minutes went 8 and 9. I think you'll see those minutes switch, and Bogut goes back to playing 23 to 24, and Ezeli goes back to 18 minutes off the bench. Bogut's a guy that I'm not rushing to pick up in fantasy leagues, but he can help in field goal percentage, in rebounds, and in blocks if you need those categories, and I don't think many people are going to be, you know, falling all over themselves to add him. So he's just a guy you can pay attention to. The last game of the night was the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Clippers. Zach Randolph was questionable earlier in the day with a calf issue. He played 40 minutes. That's exactly how you want to treat someone who's got a calf issue. 26 and 9 with 4 assists and 3 steals. Probably Zebo's best game for the year. Probably will be his best game when the year is said and done as well. Marc Gasol, I know that Vivek was railing on how bad he's been. He still had 18 and 7 with 3 assists. And yes, he hasn't been great, but I put him in the Rudy Gay category. He's the buy low. He's not the buy with a top 30 player. He's the buy with a top 80 player. And see if you can get someone to buy it on Marc Gasol. Probably not great when he goes 18 and 7 because 18 points looks sexy to some people. But yeah, no defensive stats is not a great look for him. And also going 8 of 12 from the free throw line is not awesome. Mike Conley went 16, 6, and 5. Courtney Lee, 6, 2, and 5 with a couple of steals. And Matt Barnes, 8, and 6 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. And this wing rotation is a mess at the moment. Jeff Green played 17 minutes. Said Lee, Barnes, Allen. It's really hard to own any of these guys in 12-team leagues. Brandon Wright sat this one out with that knee issue. So Jermichael Green played 16 minutes. The Grizzlies only ran a 9-man rotation. They did tighten it up a little bit with guys like Gasol and Conley and Randolph playing big minutes, and then that wing rotation spreading out a lot of the time. Chris Paul did play in this game. He was doubtful early in the game day and got upgraded to probable, and he played with a groin issue. 14, 4, and 4 for Paul. Played 33 minutes, so no minutes restriction there. Blake Griffin played 38 and went 24 and 12. His rebounding is definitely way back up this season. He dropped to a career low last season of 7.6 rebounds per game. This season, he is currently tracking at 10 rebounds a game, 28.6 points, 4 assists, half a steal, half a block on 58 and 81 shooting. So he's returning easy first-round value on the year. DeAndre Jordan, 13 and 12 with 4 blocks. A good night from him. And JJ Redick had 16 points. And as per usual, there's nothing else to really see on the Clippers in terms of their overall fantasy value. All right, that is the end of the recap for Monday's games. Going to take a short break here, and then we're going to transition into talking about the DFS action for Tuesday. I saw your picture today. Tuesday. So we're back now to talk about the daily fantasy action for Tuesday. There are 7 games on the slate, a few injuries we do need to pay attention to, and the number one injury we probably need to have a check out on is in the first game, and that is the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Washington Wizards. There is no spread for this game because we don't know the status of Bradley Beal, who had that shoulder problem. X-rays didn't show anything serious, but he is still considered questionable for this game. Because he is coming off that injury, we're not going to look at him from a daily fantasy point of view. But if he doesn't play, Otto Porter should get more of the looks. And Gary Neal becomes a minimum salary guy that you do have to pay attention to, who could easily drop you 20 to 24 fantasy points if he's in a more prominent role. So he'd be the guy to have a look at if Bradley Beal was out. Now, we also need to check on Steven Adams' status. He'll likely play. He played the last game, but still is bothered by the back problem. He's not really much of a daily fantasy factor, but if he is out, it bumps Enes Kanter's value. So have a look at Enes Kanter, who put up 31 points in the last outing. Chris Humphries, I reckon, is not a bad cheap option here. He's priced at 3,900. He put up 15 in the last game. He's averaging almost 14 a game. Well, that's not great, but against the Thunder, it's not a bad matchup for opposition power forwards. And he might have that ability. He's playing better. I think that's what I'm trying to get. He's playing better of late. The last couple of games have been a lot more improved for Chris Humphries. So he's someone to look at as a punt play in a tournament you might want to look at. John Wall at 9,500. This is a good matchup for him. Russell Westbrook is not a great defender. Wall has been putting up some really big numbers at times for the season. Don't expect him to be going out and getting 5 blocks again, but he could easily give you 40 points. It is a lot. 9,400 is a lot, but if Beal is out, that might even bump Wall's value up a little bit more. Touched Otto Porter already. Russell Westbrook. Now, the opposite is the truth for Westbrook. Yes, he's been awesome, but John Wall's a great defender. So that's going to have somewhat of a negative impact on Russell Westbrook. Not much, but when you're spending 11,000, I'm not really sure that I want to go and spend 11,000 on Russell Westbrook against John Wall. That could be an issue. 10.5 for Kevin Durant. Don't really love that. The thing is, maybe there's a homecoming factor here. It'd be interesting to see this game, to see how Durant is received in Washington, to see if there are any signs in the crowd, to see the ovation he gets. We obviously know the Wizards are trying to lure him to play for them next year. It's going to be just an interesting atmosphere. Does Durant get rattled by it? We heard him talk earlier in the day today saying how he doesn't like free agency and the focus on free agency and the attention it draws. So maybe all that attention is not going to be great for him. It could go one of two ways. He could just go balls out and put up big numbers, or it could rattle him and affect his concentration. So because there is that sort of which way it can go, and I feel it could be an extreme either way, it's a tournament sort of situation, a cash game play. I don't really think you want to go there. And I just, at that sort of salary, I think I would rather go in another direction. You might think, you know what, he's going to go out there, he's going to show these guys what he can offer. I'm maybe a little bit more pessimistic about the way that he is going to approach it. And reading some of his comments, maybe he is a little bit rattled by the attention that I think will probably be focused on him from the crowd. And I imagine there'll be some weird scenarios where he's shooting and the crowd's cheering, and just some weird things might go down in this one. The next game up is the Utah Jazz and the Cleveland Cavaliers. There is no spread available on this one as well because there's a couple of injuries on the Cleveland side that we don't know about. J.R. Smith is questionable with his bone bruise, but LeBron James has a sore thigh. He is considered probable. You'd think that LeBron is going to go, but it's something we need to monitor. Now, against the Jazz, LeBron at 10,000, I don't think he's a great matchup. The Jazz always is a slow it down option and a great defensive team with Gobert and Favors, and Hayward's a good defender. There's a lot of good defenders on this team, and I don't really think that this is going to be an ideal matchup for James, already dealing with that sore leg. I do like Gordy Hayward, though, at 6,600. I think he's on the right track. His last couple of games have been much improved. And Rodney Hood's had a couple of down games at 4,400, though. His salary's come down a little bit. He has almost popped a 30-point game already this season, so he's a guy that we can have a look at in a tournament sort of setting. Derek Favors has been really good this season. He's been putting up some pretty big numbers, but 7,700 feels a little bit too expensive for me. Kevin Love at 7,900. In most situations, I'd really love it, but going up against Rudy Gobert, not sure I'm a huge fan, and Gobert is still way, way overpriced. I don't think you can use Gobert in any daily fantasy settings at 7,800. His highest score for the season is still only 35, and that's not anywhere close to returning value. If J.R. Smith is out, which is a possibility, a bump goes to Matthew Dellavedova. A bump goes to Mo Williams as well. So there are a couple of guys that you can use in that sort of situation. The New York Knicks and the Toronto Raptors up next. The Raptors are favored by 8. We've got a low total in this one, 196. Don't think we're going to be seeing Aaron Aflalo with that hamstring. Still hasn't played a game yet this season. It's unlikely he plays here. And Damari Carroll is the one we have to watch for Toronto. He is considered questionable with the plantar fasciitis. If Carroll is out, Corey Joseph is priced at 3,700. He didn't do a huge amount in the last game, but we're talking about the Knicks here. It could be a blowout. He might get some extra run. He's a guy to have a look at. I think he's a decent guy to play. I think Robin Lopez is someone to pay attention to as well. He was huge against the Lakers. Toronto does allow some points to center, so he's worth a look in this situation too. And on the flip side, Jonas Valanciunas going up against the Knicks, he's a guy that can put up some decent stats. He's only at 6,300 as well. Kyle Lowry at 8,000, he's a good high-priced point guard. And Melo at 9,400, yes, it's expensive, but there could be an opportunity for Melo to put up some pretty big numbers. DeMar DeRozan at 76, he really struggled in the last game. Again, if he's matching up against Sasha Vujicic, you'd think that DeRozan's going to be able to have a decent game. I don't love him, but there is some value in him. Kristaps Porzingis, he's putting up some big numbers. He's averaging 27 across his last 5 games, 28 across the season. He's at 5,400. That almost makes him a guy that you want to look at in cash games because he's been really solid and really consistent. And let's hope that he continues along that path. Jerian Grant at 4,100 is probably only a tournament option, and Langston Galloway at 48 is not a bad tournament option himself. He's been getting relatively consistent minutes. If Aflalo was to play, I don't think we'd want to risk either of those guards because we just don't know exactly how Derek Fisher is going to run the rotation. And as I've said before, if we don't know how Derek Fisher is going to do something, the answer is probably incorrectly. The next game is the Lakers and the Heat. A couple of years ago, this was a marquee matchup, Kobe versus LeBron. Obviously, it's a completely different situation now. The Heat are favored by 12, so blowout factor is in play. We've got a total of 202 in this game. Justice Winslow, he's been getting big minutes lately. He's priced at 3,600. The Lakers are trash. They give up big points to everyone. In a tournament, 3,600 for Justice Winslow. He could give you 25 or 26 fantasy points, and you're giving him 2 thumbs up. He's not a cash game guy, but the numbers lately, he's averaging 15 in the last 5 games, which is actually, he's averaging more than that in the last 5 games. In the last 5, he's averaging almost, over 16.5, which is not awesome, but against the Lakers, you're expecting even more of a bump. He could push 20 in this game, and at 3,600, that's worth looking at. I like Julius Randle at 5,900 for the Lakers, and I don't really like any of the other Lakers players. For the Heat, Hassan Whiteside at 8,000, he doesn't need 30 minutes. And against the Lakers, he could be at 20 and 10 with 6 blocks at halftime against the Lakers. So he's a guy at 8,000, I think, has a significant amount of value, as does Dwayne Wade. Now, he was really poor in the last game at 7,000. Again, Lakers factor, he's someone to pay attention to. And someone who was even worse than Dwayne Wade in the last game, Goran Dragic, is now priced at 5,800. He doesn't need to do much at 5,800. Can he put up 30 points? There's a possibility he can do it. And if he's going to do it, it's going to be against this team. We've seen some big games against the Lakers, especially for point guards and big men. So Goran Dragic is in a nice situation here. Not much else really gets me that excited here. Chris Bosh at 7,900. No, I don't want D'Angelo Russell. I don't want Jordan Clarkson. And Kobe Bryant, no thank you, at 7,400. I don't want to be spending that sort of money to get Kobe into my lineup. The next game is the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. Jay Crowder will play after having that bone bruise on his knee. Marcus Smart, it appears, won't play. And for the Bucks, we've got OJ Mayo and Michael Carter-Williams ruled out already. There is a tight game here. The Bucks are favored by 1. We have a total of 202, so a pretty fantasy-friendly situation here, and that reflects in where the value is as well. I think Jay Crowder at 4,700 is actually really valuable. I like Jared Sullinger from the Celtics at 5,200, but he's probably more of a tournament option. I think he can go bigger than that, but the reliability with the front court is not necessarily there. And Isaiah Thomas at 7,300, with no Marcus Smart, he becomes a pretty smart play as well. On the Bucks side of things, with Carter Williams out, a 3,700 price tag on Jared Bayless almost feels like stealing at this point. He put up 41 in the last game, and yes, there's a chance he has a dud, but The guy he's competing with is Tyler Ennis, so Bayless is going to get the majority of the minutes. Vasquez has been shooting the ball terribly. Bayless seems to have a lot of Kidd seems to have a lot of trust in Jared Bayless, so he's a guy that $3,700, that's a cheap price. Giannis Antetokounmpo at $7,000 is also a really nice guy to look at, I think. I think he can easily return 30 points here at least and push to 38 or 40, and that would be nice at his $7,000 price tag. Greg Monroe at $8,200. It's becoming too expensive for me. Chris Middleton at $5,800 is not bad. He put up 36 in the last game, which was a season high. Yeah, not a bad option. And with who's the guy? With Marcus Smart out, Evan Turner at $5,700 will handle the ball a little bit more. So he's a guy I don't think many people will be looking at, but he can have definitely an increase in value. If you want to punt play, Kelly Olynyk at 37. He was fantastic in the last game. He put up over 40 FanDuel points, and it all depends on how he gets used. You've heard me talk ad nauseum about how good of a fantasy player Kelly Olynyk is. At $3,700, put him into one of your lineups. At $3,700, if he gives you 40 points, that is such a massive boost to your lineup and to hopefully getting a big win. The Dallas Mavericks and the New Orleans Pelicans. I sigh because there's just so many injuries with both of these teams. The Pelicans are actually favored here by 2.5. We have a huge total, 211.5. Anthony Davis at $10,800. You'd have to think that he's going to feast here in this game. Yeah, Dirk and Zaza Pachulia and Dwight Powell aren't the greatest defenders. I think there's a massive opportunity for Anthony Davis to put up big numbers here. Zaza's a solid option at 54, not spectacular, and not many other guys really stand out as being spectacular plays here. Devin Harris at 4,100 is an okay guy to look at, considering how bad the Pelicans' backcourt has been. We should see some Drew Holiday back, but he's a no-go for daily fantasy. Darren Williams at $6,700, that price feels a little bit high for me with him, and we're definitely not going Wes Matthews, we're definitely not going Chandler Parsons, even though Wes Matthews is supposed to be playing 30 minutes, he's just not producing at the moment. Parsons is going to be at 15 minutes again, so we're not dealing with him. Ish Smith and Tony Douglas will be behind Drew Holiday, so we're not going to be running those guys, and Luke Babbitt, Dante Cunningham, these guys just don't provide any value. It's all really Anthony Davis that's the fantasy value in this one. Eric Gordon's a solid option, but definitely not a spectacular guy to look at. The last game of the night is the Charlotte Hornets and the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Hornets are favored by 2.5. The Wolves had a big win over the Hawks in today's games, so they'll be looking to get at their third in a row. The total for this one is 199, so not a great total, but there is some fantasy value here. Nemanja Bjelica is priced at 4,000. He got 21 in the last game. He obviously had that close to 40-point game in the last game against the Bulls. He's averaging 22.5 in his last five, and that is worth it at 4,000. So he's a guy for majority of lineups. Same as Marvin Williams at 5,000. He has definitely regressed in the last couple of games, but at 5,000, even if he does what he did in the last game, you're definitely not out of pocket with it too much, and he can go and give you 25 points, which is a solid return. Nick Batum at 6,500 is okay, but definitely nothing too exciting. Al Jefferson, I'd probably leave alone. And Karl Anthony Towns at 6,700. Not sure that I really want to spend 6,700 on Towns here in this matchup, although he's not a bad guy to look at. Ricky Rubio's at 7,500. I'd leave that alone. And same with Andrew Wiggins at 69, even though he put up 44 points today, which is, again, it's really good. And he's averaging 30 over his last five. But at 7,000... averaging 30, it just doesn't cut it. You need to get more than that. Same goes for Kemba Walker, who's at 7,200. I think we can leave him alone in most situations. All right, that's it for today's... You know what? I always forget to do this. Let's bring it up on the screen. My DFS value plays. So if you haven't heard me talk about this before, what I do is I go through each position and give three players: a cheap, less than $5,000 option, a mid-priced $5,000 to $7,500 option, and then a $7,500 plus guy at each position. So at point guard, we've got Jared Bayless at $3,700, Goran Dragic against the Lakers at $5,800, and Kyle Lowry at $8,000. For the shooting guards, Devin Harris against the banged up Pelicans at $4,100, Dwayne Wade against the Lakers at $7,000, and DeMar DeRozan taking on the might of Sasha Vujacic at $7,600. The small forwards, Justice Winslow at $36,000, Gordon Hayward at 66 and Carmelo Anthony at 9,400. While at power forward, Chris Humphries at 39 is an interesting tournament option. Jared Sullinger at 52 and Anthony Davis at 10,800. Davis is clearly the best of all the high-priced $10,000 plus guys on the day. Robin Lopez at 4,600 for the centers, Jonas Valanciunas at 63, and then Hassan Whiteside going up against the Los Angeles Lakers is priced at $8,000. Now we're done for the podcast, guys. Don't forget to become a sponsor of the podcast, like License to Ilgauskas at Roy is the Boy on Twitter, just by leaving a review on iTunes. If you're in Australia, check out moneyball.com.au, Australia's only daily fantasy site where you can get into some Red Rock fantasy basketball tournaments and head-to-heads and all that sort of stuff. Check out basketballmonster.com, hardwoodparoxysm.com, redrockbasketball.com. Anyway, anything. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.